You're tuned into Auto Intelligence, live from Auto Trader, where data, tools, and your preferences sync to make your car shopping smooth.
They're searching inventory.
Oh, yeah.
They find what you need.
They're going to find
it. They can make a budget for your wallet to help you succeed. Pricing is precise and true.
So true.
It's smarter car shopping.
Ooh.
Just for you.
Oh, it's just for you.
Ooh.
Find your next ride at autotrader.com. Powered by Auto Intelligence.
Honestly, I wasn't sure we could pull this off ourselves.
You had the vision, and Blinds.com brought your dreams to life.
Yeah, their custom window treatments and free design consultation. Total game changer. Ava walked us through everything. Styles, colors, what would work best in this space.
And we didn't have to leave the house. Free samples showed up fast, and they made it super easy to compare and choose.
Right? Plus, no high-pressure sales pitch, just smart guidance. And the install? I thought it'd be tricky. But Blinds.com instructions were clear. Everything fits perfectly.
And thanks to their SureFit guarantee, if something doesn't fit, they remake it for free. Talk about peace of mind.
And it costs way less than having a designer to our house or going to one of those overpriced showrooms.
We saved money, got the exact look we wanted, and we did it ourselves.
We did it.
So, kitchen windows next?
Blinds.com makes buying and installing window treatments easy and affordable because nobody covers windows better than Blinds.com. Black Friday deals are going on all month long. Save up to 45% off site-wide plus an additional 10% off every order at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions apply.
Find new customers on a platform that's here to stay. With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising your business on TikTok, now is the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/tiktokads, and grow your business fast.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detectthesos.com to learn more.
Good evening and welcome to Amplify, a telephone talk show that looks at life from a religious perspective. I'm Father Ron Lengwin, hoping that you have felt the warmth of God's love in your life this day, but especially the joy you feel when you share God's love with others. So some of us missed the storm and some of us didn't. Let us continue to pray for those who are suffering from the effects of that storm, especially as it passes off now into the ocean. Also like to acknowledge that tomorrow we observe Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day, his great effort to establish peace and justice in our country and in the face of racism. And also the week of prayer for Christian unity. We're in just not quite the middle of that now. It began Friday. Goes for a week, always a week, and it's been for over 100 years now, the fact that Christ wants us to be one, not all the denominations, so we can find a way, however that might be. There are different models of unity. In my own life, 52 years ordained, and from the very beginning was locally in Butler. I was involved in ecumenism and every year after that in some way, and still am even today. So certainly one of my priorities that I will continue to work and pray for, as we certainly continue to pray for the efforts of Dr. Martin Luther King that are carried on by so many other people this day. As we do each week, we begin our program with a story that is based on faith and formed with imagination. It's a kind of an introduction to what we'll be talking about this evening, a story of faith and imagination. It had been a long day. Jesus seemed to be staring into space when a man approached him and asked, "Master, what's the secret of existence? What do you know you're not telling us?" A smile slowly filled Jesus' face, and he answered, "I will teach you how to speak to the Father. In so doing, I will answer both of your questions. The man objected, I know how to speak. I've got a voice. I know how to use my lips and my tongue. Jesus responded, but you must learn how to speak with the mind and the heart. Once more, the man objected, I use my mind. Jesus smiled again and said, your words carry like the winds through the trees, but they must penetrate the mountains. The man replied, Master, I don't understand you. Sit with me, and I will teach you, Jesus urged him. You must begin by thinking of a mountain. In his mind, the man imagined a hill. Jesus said to him, no, it must be higher and wider. And there must not be a sound on it, not even the sound of the wind, a bird, or another human voice. Only complete and beautiful silence. It was difficult for the man to do, but he began to feel all alone, slowly climbing up that mountain. Jesus instructed him, don't exert your body. Use your energy for your mind. Don't think of it as work, just climb. But empty your mind. Don't allow any feeling or sound to touch or enter your body. Tell your heart, you wish to see and feel the love of my Father. The man began to feel very relaxed. Nothing felt right, felt good. And then all of a sudden it did. Everything felt right, felt good. But a strangeness, a feeling of expectation came over him. Then a gentle voice, as soft as a whisper, it was Jesus's, said to him, when you feel almost like you are asleep, call out to my Father and tell him you are there. Keep your mind awake, but let your body rest so that your heart and soul may become one with my Father. The man did as he was directed and was filled with an inner peace. No one heard him call out because his words were spoken by his heart and his soul. Later, the people in the temple mocked and laughed at that man when he told them what had happened. They argued, how will God hear you if you don't shout and cry out loud? Doubt began to fill his mind for a moment, and so he went and prayed once again as Jesus the Master had taught him. He learned what a beautiful gift it is to be able to communicate with God in a very intimate and personal way. Because no one else knows what you have given to God or what God has given to you, not even the evil one. It took a long time, but one of Jesus' worst enemies eventually became one of his greatest followers when he saw the light. His name was Paul. A story of faith and imagination. Our guest this evening writes in her latest book titled Mindful Silence, The Heart of Christian Contemplation. Staying connected to our true self is all the more challenging when others confront us with anger, aggression, or manipulation. But it's when life delivers pain and suffering that our soul is really exposed. Sometimes our experiences betray our beliefs. We might believe that God is good, but if God is good, why is there suffering? Perhaps you found yourself wondering, if God is good, why did my partner cheat, my child lie, or my parent endure an agonizing death? Life has a way of dumbfounding our religious paradigms. Moreover, though Christians profess to follow Jesus and his teachings, rarely are any of us able to live up to his standards. For example, it's one thing to believe we should love our enemies and forgive 70 times 7, but trying to put that into practice when you've been victimized or when your enemy is a mentor, a clergy member, or a friend you once trusted. Orthodoxy and religious beliefs are fine until life circumstances betray them. Actually, The central question for our life of faith revolves around orthopraxy. How do we practice what we believe, especially when life gets stressful, difficult, and painful? Contemplative spirituality, Christian or otherwise, helps us embody our beliefs and values, especially when life gets challenging. Contemplative practice helps us cope with life. Felina Hertz is the author also of a book titled Pilgrimage of a Soul. We talked to her about with that book just a year ago, and a founding member of Gravity, which is a center for contemplative activism. And for nearly 20 years, she and her husband Chris co-directed an international nonprofit in more than 70 countries, building community among victims of human trafficking, survivors of HIV and AIDS, abandoned children, and child soldiers and war brides. And a lot of the stories of that time she brings up in this book, and how her life was influenced and changed. A spiritual director, yoga instructor, public speaker, retreat guide, and author, Felina is passionate about spirituality and making the world a better place. She has led contemplative retreats for a number of faith communities and is sought after as a speaker. Felina Hertz, welcome back to Amplify. How nice to have you.
Sorry, there was a gap in the connection. What was that?
I say, how nice to have you back 1 year later.
Yeah, I know. How about that?
I had no idea. It was literally just 1 week more later than it was last year in January. Tell us a little bit, first of all, about Gravity.
Yeah, so Gravity is a center for contemplative activism located in Omaha, Nebraska, in the heartland, as they call it, here in the Midwest. And we focus on offering spiritual direction, contemplative retreats, and Enneagram consultations and workshops.
And you've indicated in your book that you believe meditation practice has gained traction. Is that true? Still, I mean, a year later after you write the book, and why do you think that is?
Oh, yeah, it's so interesting. You know, my husband and I started Gravity I guess it's been about 7 years ago now, which is hard to believe. Time is a funny thing. It kind of eludes us. But at any rate, in those 7 years, we have seen the tide really turn in terms of, and in particular among Christians, taking interest in mindfulness, meditation, and contemplative prayer.
Yeah, those are some of the things we're going to talk about tonight. So let's begin by just discussing a little bit, telling us what is contemplative spirituality, because as you acknowledge, many of its writings seem obscure and mysterious to many people.
You know, the contemplative tradition in Christianity was lost a long time ago, but it is, in essence, a way to practice our faith. It's taking, it's really about embodying and living out the teachings of Jesus. It's a way in which we can move kind of the teachings from our head to our heart, to our body, to our behavior and actions. And we have a wellspring of practices, contemplative prayer practices that help us do just that.
You write about contemplative spirituality as a way of seeing that contemplative practices are those that create margin to pay attention to and observe your life. And this assumes that we have determined to take responsibility for ourselves, which can be an extremely important moment in our life. And you write, it involves some introspection, not for the sake of inner knowledge, but for the sake of living a more skillful life. Is that how you came to it?
Well, you know, I came to it through a crisis of faith, really. And I write about it in detail, as you know, in Mindful Silence. I found myself in Freetown, Sierra Leone, at the peak of the war over blood diamonds. That was in 2002. And though I had been serving about 8 years prior to that in all kinds of areas of human suffering around the world. What I confronted in Freetown was human brutality at a degree that I'd not really witnessed before. And it was just enough to kind of put me over the edge, and I came to recognize my limitations, my limitations in terms of what I could do to make the world a better place, and I came into limitations in terms of my paradigms, religious paradigms, worldview, how I understood myself, God, others, really struggling with reality as I, you know, just dealing with all kinds of contradictions and paradoxes, like mm-hmm. kind of what you mentioned in earlier around, you know, if God is good, why is there suffering? You know, it kind of boiled down to that. And having grown up in the church, my father was a pastor, and I'd taken my faith very seriously from a young age, and I was engaged in humanitarian and mission work because of my faith. And so coming to a place of questioning God and doubting God's goodness really, took me over the edge into what I've come to understand as a crisis of faith.
Yeah, you were in a period of despair, and you attribute some of the change in your life to Father Thomas Keating, Cistercian priest, very much mm-hmm. involved in this area. As you know, he was a mm-hmm. guest on this program a couple of times in the past. How is it that he helped you? Because his name comes up often throughout the book. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I am indebted to him. I revere him as a very important teacher in my life. After about, I guess it was nearly 2 years of what I've come to know as a dark night of soul, I was no longer able to pray in the ways that I had prayed previously. I was struggling in all areas of my faith experience, just really feeling myself as disconnected and distanced from God and really in the dark. And I came to know Father Thomas, my husband's spiritual director at the time, actually called us up one Saturday morning and said, "I'm inspired to invite you to meet my teacher, Thomas Keating." And we didn't know anything about him, and we knew even, you know, we didn't know anything about the contemplative tradition either, but we ended up having dinner with Father Thomas, and afterward he gave a teaching on the contemplative tradition and a practice called centering prayer. And it was just such a grace for me, because the practice, being a non-conceptual prayer practice, enabled me to find a way to be with my suffering and the suffering of the world, a way to sit in silence and be with all my doubts and my questions and my agony, and somehow over time found this connection to God that I was longing for.
And you write that the allures, distractions, and pace of our time, coupled with our inner illusions of self, others, and God, threaten to keep us asleep, at bay from the source of our existence, purpose, and rest. Most of us go through life sleepwalking. It's not easy to wake up. Usually it takes a crisis of some sort to do so. An unexpected career transition, a feared medical diagnosis, a miscarriage, a natural catastrophe. But contemplative prayer aids the waking process too. Tell us a little bit about that waking process.
Yeah, so, you know, this crisis of faith that I encountered was just enough to wake me up. And what I mean by that is I began to see, that who I thought I was wasn't really who I was. Mm-hmm. And this came over time, kind of waking up to the illusions of my self-image, my persona. And so when I began to see that, then I was poised to be able to then be receptive to my true identity. And I think about this in the terms, Henry Nouwen gives some really helpful language around this. He says that there's three lies that we often listen to and let define us. I am what I have, I am what I do, I am what other people say or think about me. And we tend to live in those lies. It's very unconscious. We don't know anything different. Waking up is when we begin to see, oh wow, like I'm really defining myself in these ways. Thomas Keating has a similar framework that he calls Programs for Happiness, that we, when we begin to wake up, we see that we are over-identified with or over-attached to this drive for power and control, affection and esteem, or security.
Alina, let me stop you there. We need to take this break, and then we'll pick it right up there when we come back. Welcome back to Amplify, where our guest this evening is Felina Hertz. We're talking about her latest book, Mindful Silence, The Heart of Christian Contemplation. We were talking about a time in her life when she was really in despair. She believed in life at one time that if she could do for others, maybe they would find her worth loving. And she learned that I am who others need me to be is a lie. But Father Thomas Keating, well known in this particular area, helped her and helped her to awaken from this. And Felina, when I broke away from you, you were talking about how he did that and what he taught you. Is there more you'd like to add to that?
Well, I think that probably sums it up. I mean, just that he helped me wake up to some of the lies that I was listening to about who I am. And helped me ground my identity and really in the presence of God, who loves me beyond what other people have to say or think about me.
And the invitation to die spiritually follows waking up. And you write that these small deaths support the stages, and we talked about this last time, awakening, longing, darkness, transformation, intimacy, and union are preludes to death, and at the same time, the fruit of dying, you write, like a labyrinth, we cycle in and out of these stages in the journey home to our true self. Tell us a little bit more about the invitation to die and what is meant by that.
Well, if we take seriously the path of transformation, we will confront these attachments to things like power and control, security and survival, and affection and esteem. And when we see those attachments and we see the ways in which we've defined ourselves by various kinds of lies and illusions, then that stuff has to die. Our attachment to being anything other than who we are in God has to go, that we might live a more free life that is free of these kinds of attachments and programs for happiness, if you will. And so this invitation that Jesus gives us to take up our cross, to follow him, requires this experience of death that we might live into the resurrected life, which is a life that is lived as our true self, the new creation part of us. There's a lot that has to die that we might live into the new life that's offered us.
And when you write about attachments, you write, our addictions may not take the form of chemical cravings, though it can turn into that, but at the core reside in our compulsions to be identified with what we have, what we do, and what others say about us. We are enslaved to our unconscious impulses and do everything we can to satiate our inner discontent, nonstop scrolling through social media, which only magnifies our unhappiness, unnecessary shopping in the hopes that more stuff will make us feel better, overeating or drinking to drown and dull the inner ache. We have any number of escape routes from pain, but the path of transformation is learning how to be with the pain so new life can emerge in and through us. Contemplative spirituality teaches us how to do that. And if we take this one step further, tell us why you believe that contemplative prayer and social action must go hand in hand for effective social change.
Well, you know, if we don't take up a serious spiritual path or spiritual practice or contemplative practice, we will continue to live out of our illusions of self, God, and others. And those kinds of falsities end up causing us to project a lot of things on the external world. We aren't able to live in a kind of free-flowing manner with the external world. And so we have to both take responsibility for our inner life, our understanding of self, God, and others, and then offer ourselves in service to healing the world around us.
Mm-hmm.
But without contemplation, there can be quite a bit of projection going on in the external world, and more limitations in terms of being effective in our service.
And you point out that social change is possible when we love others as we love ourselves, as we learn in the gospel, of course, but many of us struggle to accept love. I think we'd find out it's very surprising how true that is of so many people. Maybe I should have started here a little bit sooner, but how is contemplative prayer different or the same as what most people think of as prayer?
Well, we have inherited in Western Christianity a faith that is largely reliant on the intellectual, rational mind. So that means that much of our prayer is formed around words and language of the mind, you know. And contemplative prayer exercises what Cynthia Bourgeau calls kind of this other mind. It's kind of a different operating system. It is the heart mind, she calls it. And I like that a lot. We have the intellectual, rational mind, and we have what you might refer to as the heart mind. Contemplative prayer exercises that. You might also think of it in terms of a right-brained mind or an intuitive mind. It's really about, contemplative prayer really is about exercising the three intelligences, the mind, the heart, and the body. And so This is largely what sets contemplative prayer apart from other forms of prayer that many of us have been formed in.
And when you provide great examples, one after each chapter, and they are breath prayer, the prayer of examine, Lectio Divina, labyrinth, the welcoming prayer, and centering prayer. After what you've just explained, select one of them so that people have some sense of what we're talking about.
Well, why don't we start with the breath prayer? So the breath prayer is a modernized version of the Eastern Orthodox prayer of the heart, the prayer where we would pray over and over again, Jesus, Son of God, have mercy on me, a sinner.
Mm-hmm.
And so we find this in the tradition, and we've modernized it to use different words, and we can inhale an invocation of God, so using any kind of word that helps us connect with our sense of God. And on the exhale, we breathe out our prayer, petition, praise. And in this way, we synchronize the breath with the words so that over time, as we're praying in this way, we're praying with the whole mind, heart, and body, and we're exercising this deeper heart, this inner perception, what's kind of an organ of perception that we're exercising, that just brings us more in alignment with the presence of God, which leads to greater discernment, kind of a greater sense of our connection with God, of being held in God and led by God. And so in this way, we nurture and nourish our identity, which is from God, in God, with God, and God in and through us.
And when you talk about these forms of prayer, you note that things that are good for us don't always come easily. So we should expect that. But what harm can come when we neglect our spirituality?
Wow. All kinds of harm. It's everything that we see taking place in our world today. As more time goes on, the more I'm convinced that the problems in our external world are really a reflection of what's happening inside of us on a collective basis. So when we neglect our inner life and what our inner unconscious motivations, for example, we really set ourselves up for manipulating others, using others, imposing our will on others, and all the usual suspects, like judging other people, excluding others, the worst of what we can be in terms of divisions and causing pain for others. And so if we want to see the world set right, we really have to take responsibility for ourselves and open ourselves up to this kind of inner cleansing, or what Thomas Keating calls divine therapy.
Yeah, and you experienced divine therapy, didn't you?
Oh, certainly. I think it's an ongoing work in progress, for sure. Just cleaning up and clearing up, these illusions about who I am and who God is and who others are.
And we need to get past the belief that contemplation is something rare and available only to the chosen few, because that's not true, is it?
That's right. I think we got misled along the way to think that contemplation and contemplative spirituality is for those who take religious vows and join a monastery or something, but this is far from the truth. Contemplative spirituality is for anyone who takes serious their relationship with Jesus and wants to be faithful to the path of Jesus. We need spiritual practices to help us with that.
You write about your change in this way: I was awakening to a new dimension of faith, where my beliefs in God were no longer simply intellectual ideals, but rather a lived reality. I was experiencing God in prayer, and I was being changed. You've talked about the world, and you've just talked about yourself. What does it mean when you say that you believe we're in the midst of an evolution of human consciousness?
I have just seen over time that more and more people are waking up to the possibility of being changed and being transformed, becoming more than they were. And more people are desiring to take seriously this kind of human project of what does it mean to be human and what does it mean to be divinely human. In the Eastern Church, we understood this as divinization, taking seriously the teachings of our scriptures about, Jesus' admonition in particular about becoming perfect. Many of us in the West think that is something we cannot live into, but this perfection that Jesus was referencing was really about becoming whole, becoming a whole person that is not fragmented by sin and illusion, but coming into that oneness that you spoke about earlier, of knowing ourselves to be one with God and one with the created world. And it's when we're rooted in that kind of identity as really beloved children of God, of human beings with divine DNA, then we unlock our potential to be more than we imagined ourselves to be. And when we can be freed up into that kind of lived experience, then our service in the world is just so much more effective. You know, it's like soul speaking to soul. It's like we are awakened, and we can awaken that in others and touch that in others in terms of like who we really are and the meaning of life. And so we need some kind of way to, you know, really wake us up to that identity and to know who we really are, that we might really flow with the love of God in the world, to see change.
Right. You're right about that. The contemplative practice helps us to become more cooperative with the divine will, and you're convinced that there is a spiritual dimension to everything in life. And you talk about Thomas Merton, too, in the book, and you indicated that he spoke about the true self and the false self. What is the difference between those two selves, the true and the false?
Mm. Yeah, so the true self is the part of us that knows ourselves to be one with God, to be from God, in God, God in us. The false self lives under this illusion of separateness, as if we are separated from God and have to figure out some way to get reconnected to God. But the true self already knows ourselves to be in God. We could not exist apart from God. And it's in that, really, that awakening to our union with God, that's really the point of grace, waking up to that reality and living from that reality. When we live from a place of separateness, you know, this is the function of the false self, and this is what leads us to do all kinds of things to try to be acceptable and to make ourselves more lovable and these kinds of things. But the true self doesn't need to do that, because we know ourselves already to be fully accepted and fully loved.
Yeah, knowing your purpose, you indicate, and discerning what this, when to say yes and when to say no, is the beginning of discovering who you are, that aimless wandering is no way to live. The difficulty is that some people don't realize, of course, when they are wandering aimlessly. And you write that the average person in today's society has no idea who she or he is, let alone what their purpose is. What harm is there in that, if that's the stage one finds him or herself in?
Well, first of all, I mean, it's certainly a terrible way to live, you know. It lacks any kind of purpose or meaning, and it strikes me as a sleepy way to live, asleep and not living in vitality or the abundance that Jesus spoke about. You know, the harm really is that we're not fully participating in this co-creation with God that's possible when we do wake up to who we really are. And so not participating in that co-creation is harmful to the mysterious created order that we're a part of. Paul referred to it as the body of Christ, you know, this reality. If the arm isn't taking responsibility for being the arm, then the body is affected. So we all have a part to play in this mysterious created order that we're a part of. And if we're wandering aimlessly, then we're not taking part in that, and the rest of us suffer for it.
Let me read us out to our next break. You write in your book, titled Mindful Silence, making important life decisions is challenging because there are usually conflicting voices in our head. In my experience, there are at least three: my true self, my false self, and the voice of someone else whom I'm tempted to try and please or obtain approval from. It's hard enough to distinguish between my true and false self. Placating to what I think others want from me just makes matters worse. Discernment, or discerning spirits, is an art form, but before it becomes a masterpiece, it's more like finger painting. You just figure it out as you go. And you write about discernment, cultivating discernment, the capacity to know who we are and what our purpose is at the heart of contemplative spirituality. Uncovering our identity requires a spirituality that integrates both contemplation and action. We're going to take this break. Welcome back to the second hour of Amplify, where our guest is Felina Hertz. We're talking about her latest book, which is titled Mindful Silence, subtitled The Heart of Christian Contemplation. And that's what we've been talking about, Christian contemplation. She believes that contemplative spirituality is about obedience flowing from love, obedience to God, who is love, who has a unique purpose for each of us. And she writes, it's from God's love that we live and move and have our being. Meditating on God's love establishes inner freedom. That freedom enables one's desires to be ordered or aligned with our highest purpose. Likewise, inner freedom makes it possible for us to recognize and overcome disordered desires and that which opposes our highest purpose. Discernment frees us to hear the voice of God and commit to God's creative, compassionate, liberating project in this world. She believes also that the soul is made to love and serve God and others. Tell us a little bit about Ignatius of Loyola, who you believe is one of the greatest teachers in the contemplative tradition.
Ignatius was a master of discernment. I've not come across anyone that matches his wisdom on discernment, really. He was he lived in the 16th century in Spain and founded the Society of Jesus, what we know as the Jesuits. And he might have been a little obsessive compulsive, but he was completely devoted to the path of transformation in Christ. And he set about a program, really, that is being used 500 years later, the spiritual exercises. And it's a thorough exploration of one's identity in Christ. And he gave us the prayer of examen, which is a wonderful practice that we can do that helps us begin to discern God's presence and action in our life. And, he's just one of the greatest.
And talking about discernment, let me read still another passage in which you mentioned Martin Luther King Jr., who we observe tomorrow. To discern, you write, our highest purpose, we must have the courage to be led wherever the Spirit leads. We must hold a healthy sense of detachment from the things of the world. It's that kind of inner freedom that sometimes gets people killed. Just think of the Master Jesus and the great leaders like Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr. When we are indifferent, we are free to follow Christ and thus live into our destiny and fulfillment. No longer held captive by countless choices masquerading as freedom, we are liberated by healthy detachment, really free. Decisions are no longer a burden, but a bold prospect to allow more of the Christ life, more of love, to flow through us. And that follows up on your connection between social action and Christian contemplation, doesn't it?
Sure does, yeah. I mean, don't we want to be vessels in which the love of God can flow freely through us in service of healing our world and making our world a better place? I think these icons that you've mentioned here from the book, you know, are so important for us to realize our own potential.
I'm going to open the phone lines now. If there's anyone there that would like to call us to join in our discussion, I have a lot more to talk about. But you could call us at 866-391-1020. It's toll-free, of course, 866-391-1020. Felina, what does it mean to listen to your body?
Yeah, so this is one of the three intelligences or intelligence centers, the mind, the heart, and the body. And sadly, I think here in the West, we've become quite divorced from the body. We don't pay attention to the body. We so revered the mind that sort of to the neglect of the wisdom of our body. And so listening to what's going on in the body can be incredibly informative and help us in discernment. There is a knowing in the body that sometimes knows things before our mind does. So if we stop and become observant, we may notice, for example, you know, a churning in the stomach or tightness in the shoulders or the jaw when we are just engaged in certain circumstances in our life. And if we listen to that, we may be able to discern a more appropriate response to whatever the situation is that we're encountering.
In chapter 4, the title of chapter 4 is Discovering Darkness is Light. How is it that darkness is a central part of a faithful life?
Yeah, this is one of those wonderful discoveries. I grew up in a faith tradition that kind of gave me the impression that if I experienced darkness in my spiritual life or perhaps dryness or aridness, that this was an indication that there was something wrong with me, that I didn't have enough faith or I wasn't praying enough or something of that nature. But what I've come to realize, and through the teachings of people like St. John of the Cross, that when we are experiencing darkness, this is actually a season in which the presence of God is very much active and a part of our life. It's just that the light of God is so bright in our life, we experience something like darkness. John of the Cross writes about it with the metaphor of fire acting on a log of wood. And there is great light and fire, but the wood experiences this darkness and this drying out kind of thing. And so this is a part of the journey in which we are really beginning to mature, and we are being weaned away from some of the more immature connections with God, and God is bringing us into these other realms of connection with God that we couldn't have known otherwise.
And within this context, you write in your book that darkness plays a crucial role in Christian transformation, that our image of God profoundly influences our spiritual journey, that when you feel God's absence, it may be progress, that we must put our trust in the God of love, and that most of us never imagined that darkness could be the consequence of deepening trust and letting go into God. And And I'm leading up then to have you perhaps tell us a little bit then about your own mystical experience of being in the womb of God, and then that experience being reversed.
Yeah, this was pretty incredible. 1 year I was making hermitage in in the Blood of Christ Mountains in New Mexico, and I was high in the mountains. It was winter. There was a snowstorm that hit the first night, and I was staying in this little one-room hermitage that was named for a bear that had been tragically killed during the building of this hermitage. And as I was spending time there in complete solitude, silence, and stillness, and then a lot of prayer, I had this sense of being held in the womb of God. And it was, you know, something that it wasn't an intellectual, rational kind of thing. It was a knowing in my blood and in my bones that I was in the womb of God, and there was nothing that could separate me from God. And then the next year, I think it was, I was in different mountains in Utah for another hermitage, and I was battling a fairly serious disease called endometriosis, which affects my womb, and I was in a lot of pain and discomfort, and I had hoped to do a lot of study and reading, but the pain was preventing me from that. All I could do was sit in silence and contemplative prayer, and over time, as I just let myself kind of let go into that prayer and let go of my agenda for what I wanted to accomplish that week, I was overcome with this realization that God was in my womb, even though it was diseased and I was in the process of healing that. But even in that diseased place, that hurting place, that painful place, and in my very being, you know, this realization that God was there. So this connection, you know, of being in God and God being in us is overwhelming and incredibly liberating.
And let me emphasize it as you write it. Both are true at the same time. We are in God, and God is in us. But it takes experiences of darkness and God's felt absence to awaken to this. As we rest more deeply in God, God can rest more deeply in us. This is the way of divine union. And as our consciousness stabilizes in this union, we can cooperate with God in the healing of the world. Such a very important point. Tell us a little bit about St. John of the Cross. You talk about him in this chapter.
Well, yeah, John of the Cross was really helpful to me in those early days when I first had that crisis of faith and found myself experiencing a dark night of soul. John of the Cross is also from Spain, like Ignatius, and he was a student of Teresa of Avila, another doctor of the church. And John of the Cross, he suffered terribly among his brothers in the Carmelite order. And he, better than anyone, really helped us navigate darkness and dark nights of soul with profound wisdom that can only come from someone who has experienced great suffering and the great mystery that carries us through that and back into light and hope. And so he really has helped me navigate dark seasons in my life, what he does is he helps me not be overcome by the felt affective kind of experience of darkness that is very dry and lonely and can be despairing and that sort of thing. He helps me stay kind of grounded and rooted in faith and trust, kind of helping me to just like endure the season, but not kind of give in to the feelings that can be pretty overwhelming. But trusting that God is at work, I just can't see it. And then it's, you know, when we come out of those dark seasons that we're able to look back and realize, wow, God was really doing something in me. I'm different in very concrete ways.
And you're right that John's mysticism invites us to empty ourselves so that God can have more space to live more fully within and through us. This is the way of the Paschal Mystery, as we let go of control and yield to God in contemplative prayer. We will undergo the way of Jesus, suffering, death, and ultimately resurrected life. As the old adage goes, no pain, no gain. The natural order in all of life is death and rebirth. If we want to live an abundant life, we will gladly yield to this process. For like John discovered, the way of the cross is our ultimate peace and fulfillment. And perhaps that's why Jesus tells us to take up our cross and bear it.
That's pretty good writing.
Yes, it is, isn't it?
Yeah, sometimes when I hear people read this, I'm like, wow, like, that, who wrote that?
Yes, right.
That's great.
And you point out that once we taste divine peace and divine love within, we are liberated to share such graces with others. But, so we've talked about John of the Cross, and we could talk about St. Francis of Assisi, but that's not really like most people would want to talk about him. Your preference is not to talk about him, not in a negative way, but rather you want to talk about St. Clare, don't you? And the impact
that's
that she's
right.
had on you. Tell us a little bit about St. Clare.
So she's another one that just, you know, there's an old saying, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And I feel very blessed that many teachers have been brought my way over the years, and most of them dead, most of them not living, like John of the Cross and Ignatius and St. Clare of Assisi is another one. And she was this radical young woman who totally defied the conventions of her day and risked everything to follow Francis. And she was the first woman to join the Franciscan order. And she was the one to carry on and preserve the intentions of Francis after he passed. She was the first woman to write the rules to her order. And she was a sought-after spiritual director for bishops and priests and all kinds of people. She was deeply devoted to the contemplative life, and as a woman in her time, she wasn't afforded the same privileges as Francis and his brothers to be able to like go around and be like in the active, what we called traditionally the active life outside of the monastery. She was really confined to the monastery, but it was through her devotion to prayer that she really fueled much of the brothers' work. And then you see all these people coming to her because she had tapped into such a wellspring of wisdom. And so she's a great inspiration to me.
Right, you point out that she was devoted to contemplation and became a counselor to Francis and his brothers, and that if you had a patron saint, it would be her. that you would select her, that you would want to follow her life, to examine her life as deep as you could, and to learn from what we could from her. And part of the reason you indicate that you would want to do that is because she mirrors to us who we really are. And there are people in our life who do that for us. We're going to take this final break, and then we'll be right back. Welcome back to the final segment of Amplify with Felina Hertz. We're talking about her book, Mindful Silence, The Heart of Christian Contemplation. Felina, one of the points that you address in your book is that you believe that part of the disillusionment with Christianity today is its shallowness of teaching. Amplify on that for us. What do you mean by that? I'm sure there are people who would agree with you. A lot that would disagree too. But
You know, for me, I think it goes back to this this thing I was saying earlier around how we have made Christianity so much a matter of the mind, so that a lot of the teaching comes back to an ascent of belief. And I think a lot of folks are not experiencing in the church this soul-to-soul connection of, you know, teaching that awakens all of the intelligences, the mind, the heart, the body, for like real change in one's life. So, you know, belief systems really produce little change in one's life. We can believe all kinds of things, but unless we have found a path of transformation, those beliefs will have little effect on who we are.
And in dying for life, you raise the point that that we have to, that it's the young people today that our society has made a, well, not young people, I shouldn't say that, but unfortunately, you're right, our society has made an idol out of youth, as if being young is somehow so wonderful. Sure, it has its gifts, just like every stage of life, but it also has its, what has its challenges. And you write a little bit later, wisdom comes with age, because it takes time and experience to learn the greatest lessons of life. The lessons that matter teach us what it means to be human, to love, suffer, lose, forgive, and love again. We learn these lessons through the grueling process of dying to our fell self. It really does feel like death. Amplify on that for us a little bit.
Well, as we follow this way of losing our life, letting go of our life, and following the path of Jesus, we come to realize just how much we like to be in control of who we are and how our life goes. That alone is just, it's a lot to let go of, and it's hard, and it's not easy. It is not a path for the faint of heart. You know, this is, this is really hard work, letting go and trusting. It's a difficult way, but it's the most liberating and the most gratifying and most meaningful way to live.
And you took a lot, you learned a lot from how it is that Father Thomas Keating accepted death and dying. Say a little bit about that final experience that you had with him and what you learned from it.
It will be 3 years ago. I guess that's right. 2 years ago. I think it was two years ago this August. I was in Snowmass, and I was with some friends, and we were spending time with Father Thomas, and and for anyone who may be familiar with him, he had been dying for quite some time. He was close to death many times and somehow kept hanging on. And so we were actually surprised that he was feeling well enough to meet with us. But he, we came to learn that, well, we asked him, you know, how are you? And he said, well, I'm busy dying. And a little bit later we asked, well, what is that like? And he said it was the hardest work of his life. And we came to learn that he was suffering a lot. I think he didn't go into detail, but we were able to kind of put some things together. And it seemed he was not only suffering physically, but psychologically, emotionally, spiritually. And as he spent time with us, it was almost 2 hours that we shared together, and it was like the heavens just opened through him. And as he shared, and it was like he was speaking directly to each of our soul in just the way that we needed it. I mean, this was a powerful example of what's possible when someone really empties themselves to make room for the living God. It's the soul-to-soul experience. And I just remember feeling that as I was with him, that this was an example of one who's like a seed that falls to the ground and dies, breaks open, and this new life is ushered forth. And it was just so incredible to really encounter God in and through him in a way that left all of us changed, you know.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that he said is, dying is becoming nothing, and that's not easy. It's the hardest work of my life. What did he mean by that? That's dying is becoming nothing.
It is this radical letting go of all that we think we are. Becoming, yeah, it's this radical self-emptying. In Paul's writings, in St. Paul's writings, he talks about kenosis, this Greek word that means self-emptying. And this is the example of Jesus who became nothing, that we might become something. It's the same invitation for us.
And so you indicated that he had learned the art of letting go of his false self so that his true self, the self united in God, could be free. And we have that distinction once again between the false self and the true self. The false self, you write, is the self that has a mind that doesn't understand, eyes that cannot see, and ears that cannot hear. And you indicate that we must lose or die to our false self so that we can find our true self. And then you write about the true self. It is our true self that has a mind big enough for the contradictions and paradoxes of life. Exercising faith when everything in us doubts, hoping when we're in despair, and loving when we're hurting. It's the true self that has ears that hear through delusion and eyes that see through illusion, but it takes time to awaken such luminous identities. What are you teaching us there?
Well, it's just, it is a lifelong kind of project of learning how to die that we might truly live. And it's not something that happens overnight. It is something that we commit to, and we need a way, a practice that helps us with that commitment of letting go, of dying. Because this is not easy for us. We don't naturally let go. We don't naturally trust enough to let go into God. And so we practice day by day. And this process, it's just this wisdom saying that we learn how to die before we die. And if we want to live, you know, an abundant life, we will find a way to do just that. It's the most meaningful way to live.
And so you're right, there's something in our human nature that resists dying. To die is to let go of everything that attempts to define our identity and determine our happiness. We think we know who we are and what's good for us, but the truth is, we don't know who we are and what will ultimately make us happy. That doesn't seem like something most people would want to admit.
And yet, if people are honest, they'll see that many of their attempts to find happiness are leaving them empty and unhappy. And so this is where, we might determine we take a chance on another way, which is the way of letting go and trusting in the one who created us to order our life in such a way that we might find true happiness.
And so, again, the contemplative path teaches us how to die to our doubt, despair, and pain so that we can truly live in the realm of faith, hope, and love. In so doing, we not only find the meaning of life for ourselves, but we become vessels of vitality for others. Furthermore, if we can learn how to die now, we'll be well practiced and therefore more receptive to that final death. And let me read one more paragraph as we begin to reach the conclusion of our program. Over time, you write, and the title of the book is Mindful Silence, over time, as we learn to let go into the divine through contemplative prayer, our entire being is illuminated. We begin to see with greater clarity a long and broad view. We grow in oneness with the divine and the whole created world. We love more freely and forgive more generously. Having freely received, we freely give. We become instruments through which Christ can heal, liberate, and transform the world. Have you experienced this in your own life, yourself?
Mm. Well, I think in my own small way, yes. Like, this is the only way that I can write such things, is seeing it happen in my life, you know. And for nearly 20 years, I was efforting a lot in the world to try to make the world a better place. And I was doing, wonderful, noble things. And then my life was radically changed, and I found myself on the contemplative path and seemingly, not doing as these kinds of, humanitarian kinds of noble work, as many of those kinds of noble works in the world. And yet, witnessing more people really transformed in their life through this work, which is like, my work is a product of this letting go process. Like, I could have never made my life what it is today. It is the fruit of letting go. And it's in that letting go that my life has taken the form that it has and has ended up being so beneficial to so many people, more so than all the effort I put into those 15 years of trying to set the world right.
Mm-hmm. And you point out, don't you, that there were a lot of, when Mother Teresa, St. Mother Teresa of Calcutta, died, and they got a hold of her journal, and there were years of spiritual darkness and doubt, they used that as a way of criticizing her, but they're really viewing it the wrong way, aren't they?
Yes, yeah. I write about her in Mindful Silence as well. She's another one of those teachers that I was so graced to actually meet and be personally influenced by. And it is, you know, in that radical self-giving, self-emptying that she did, and she lived the way of letting go, giving her whole life to God. And though she experienced darkness and doubt and all of that, you know, she is one who was so incredibly consumed by God that people were transformed, you know, in her, within her sphere of influence, which was quite great. It's unfortunate that she didn't have better spiritual directors to help her understand what she was going through psychologically and emotionally and spiritually, because it's easy for the rest of us to see that she was, it's like her being was so thin, and the presence of Jesus was just like shining through her life and living through her life, you know?
Yes.
But when we die like that, it is painful to our own senses. And so that's why we need the help of teachers to help us understand and integrate what is happening in our life.
Her words say a lot about her life, though. You write, she had heard Jesus' call, come be my light. And she became that light for the world, all the while living in felt darkness herself. In her private journals, Mother wrote, quote, if I ever become a saint, I will surely be one of darkness. I will continually be absent from heaven to light the light of those in darkness on earth. And then you write, she illuminates so clearly that the path to life is found by dying. So she seemed to have some understanding of what she herself was going to go through.
Mm-hmm. You know, she is such an icon of what St. John of the Cross wrote about, with that metaphor of like a log. She was like a log of wood that was caught on fire, like to her own senses. You know, she experienced such darkness and aridity and all that comes with that spiritually in terms of her doubts and such. But she was on fire with the light of God, transforming the world, you know?
Mm-hmm. You write that life is a gift and love is the point, and pointing out that it's one thing to know about God, our beliefs and our doctrines, it's another to know God. When we enter the cloud of unknowing, we are forced to contend with suffering, doubts, questions, and the lack of answers for the complexities of life. Then in time, we are drawn away from our overdependence on intellectual assumptions and beliefs and into actual encounter with the divine. Our guest this evening has been Felina Hertz. We've been talking about her book, Mindful Silence. Felina, thank you so very much for being with us once again tonight. There's always so much we can learn from you. And I hope that the world is changing into a deeper consciousness as you and others think it is. I hope it is for our good and will bring us closer to God. So bless you and your husband and all those you love.
Thank you, Monsignor, for your work and your presence in the world and for taking time to be with me tonight. Appreciate
all right.
It.
Enjoyed it. Thank you very much. Good night.
Mm-hmm. Good night.
There are a lot of places where I could pull from things that she has written. Let me just read us out to the end of our program. After nearly 2,000 years of Christianity, nations are plagued with brutal exploitation, horrific war, and destruction of our planet. Our human family is fragmented by fear, suspicion, and judgment of one another. We are far from living like the unified sons and daughters of God that we are. Think about it. As children of God, we have divine DNA. We are created for magnificent purpose in the world. Human evolution has helped us embrace the wonder and gifts of the rational, intellectual mind. Humanity has achieved remarkable heights in scientific exploration and scope. The intellectual mind offers solutions for some of the world's greatest problems. Yet, we are falling short. A far cry from doing even greater things than Jesus, like he said we would do. Utilizing only the intellectual mind will not do. We also need to employ the contemplative mind. In time, we put the mind in the heart through spiritual practice, thus waking up the contemplative mind. In so doing, we're able to perceive the reality of wholeness and the unity of existence. Don't forget then how precious life is and how powerful love is. Tell someone now that you love him or her. Pray for peace as if it depended on you alone, and come back next Sunday and amplify with us.
You're tuned into Auto Intelligence, live from Auto Trader, where data, tools, and your preferences sync to make your car shopping smooth.
They're searching inventory.
Oh, yeah.
They find what you need.
They're gonna find it.
You can make a budget for your wallet to help you succeed. Pricing's precise and true.
So true.
It's smarter car shopping.
Ooh.
Just for you.
Oh, it's just for you.
Ooh.
Find your next ride at autotrader.com. Powered by Auto Intelligence.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but... Scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule. And there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over. And I'm thinking of something.
From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Black Friday deals are going on all month long. Save up to 45% off site wide plus an additional 10% off every order at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions apply.
Looking for a new way to grow your business? With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising on TikTok, now's the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/tiktokads, and grow your business fast.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit detecttheSOS.com today to learn more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.